Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
What's going on, everybody? And welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today, presented by Express. Express confidence, express you. Express is all new and all about you with a fresh mix of casual, versatile, and super comfortable styles. More on their awesome variety later on in the podcast. Tuesday, July 20th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White. Today on the podcast, we've got some double dongs, some meaningful double dongs. Meet the Mets. They were mashing on Monday. Did you know? Have some fantasy fun facts specifically for you, Scott, and anyone else who's listening. And Team Name Tuesday. What's up, Scott? It's only been like, I don't know, 3 hours since we last talked.
Hasn't been long enough.
You've said that a lot lately. Well, are you getting tired of me, Scott?
No, not at all. No, really, not at all. Not at all.
All right, I just had to make sure. Let's kick things off. Some of Monday's action.
Oh my goodness gracious!
All right,
that wasn't convincing, was it?
No, it wasn't. Sorry. I'm like, all right, deep down, Scott.
I love you, Frank.
Scott's just had enough.
Am I going far enough?
Scott's had enough. All right. Oh my goodness gracious for you, Scott, from Monday.
Yeah. So let's talk about Mitch Garver, Mitchard, as I like to call him, Mitch Garver. He came back, and he came back sporting, not that I saw it, but, you know, sounded like he was speaking pretty openly about it. He came back sporting a Kevlar cup. He said it's bulletproof. His new cup is bulletproof. So, you know, just a reminder why he was injured, why he's been gone all this time. Had a little incident below the belt, but now he's bulletproof down there, and he played like it in his first game back. Homered in both of his official at-bats, and his season numbers are not that great, but it's worth reminding you, especially coming off this splashy return, that he was batting .281 with a .1017 OPS in June. Really seemed like he was rounding back into 2019 Mitch Garver form. I don't know that he'll ever really get all the way back to 2019. That was a ridiculous season. But striking out 44.3% of the time in April. It was down to 24.7% of the time in May. And with an enormous walk rate. And he was hitting well. So, and then he comes back hitting two home runs. So very excited to see for a player who been a stud in the past. And probably half your league could use a catcher. So welcome back, Mitch Garver, with your new Kevlar cup.
Always wear a cup. It's a lesson for you kids out there trying to play baseball and make it to the bigs. Mitch Garver, 50% rostered. He was one of four players with a double dong on Monday. And I was getting a bunch of questions, Scott. Would you drop Yadier Molina for Mitch Garver?
Yes.
I would do the same thing. I actually just made the change in my rankings because as soon as I said it on Twitter, someone called me out and said, well, your rankings don't say that. Well, you know, Mitch Garver just came back. Need a little time to update the rankings, everybody. But I would rather have Mitch Garver over Yadier Molina. How about Mitch Garver versus Max Stassi?
Yes. Yes, I would say so. As much as we've been pumping Max Stassi here lately, and for good reason, his roster rate is still way too low, but I would take the chance on Mitch Garver because I think, honestly, I know last year was terrible. And again, I know his season long numbers are not that good, but I've been impressed enough from June 1st on from Mitch Garver that I still think his upside at the position, it may be second to none. It may be second to none.
Well, is it second to Gary Sanchez? That's the last question for you. Garver or Sanchez? Well,
I mean, it's possible Mitch Garver has more upside than Gary Sanchez, but I do think that's a line I can't cross in terms of who I add, who I drop. Really, I think it's six catchers. I'm just going top of mind here, so I may not have that number exactly right. But I think there are six catchers that are bulletproof, much like Mitch Garver's Kevlar Cup. And those catchers would be, I can't even name one of them now. The one for the Phillies, JT Realmuto.
Yeah, I think it's Realmuto, Salvador Perez, Wilson Contreras, Will Smith, Buster Posey, and Gary Sanchez.
Yes, those are the six. All right, got it, sir. Thank you.
So I updated the ranks and I moved him up to 9. Just ahead of him, I have Max Stassi and Omar Narvaez. If you wanted to take the shot on Garver, you think he has more upside? I think I like Stassi a little bit more. You can make the argument, I think, pretty easily for Garver over Omar Narvaez, but I do think that one's pretty close. But he's already a top 10 catcher, so that just reminds you the state of the position. Mitch Garver's back, and he's hitting dongs for the Minnesota Twins. You know who else was hitting dongs? The Mets. They hit 7 home runs in Great American Ballpark on Monday. And it helps when you're facing Vladimir Gutierrez, who is an extreme flyball pitcher. And, of course, the Reds' bullpen is very bad. So definitely helped out there. But that included Pete Alonso hit his 18th. Dom Smith hit his 10th. Dom Smith, very quietly coming around here in July. Kevin Pillar hit his 9th. James McCann hit his 8th. Jeff McNeil hit his 4th. Nice to see. But the one I want to focus on here, Scott, is Michael Conforto, who hit 2 home runs in this game himself. He has 8 hits, including 4 homers over his last 5 games. And dare I say it, I think the buy low window may have closed on Michael Conforto. What do you think?
Maybe. It's still very recent, and it's not like he's been Juan Soto since returning from the All-Star break here.
Pretty close. I'm pretty close to it.
Juan Soto, so he hit his 4th and 5th home run since the All-Star break.
Sure.
Today, on Monday. That's in 4 games. In 4 games, Juan Soto has 47.5 fantasy points in 4 games. So that's freaking amazing. I mean, Michael Conforto is still batting .217 with a .718 OPS on the year, which tells you just how slow of a start, if we could even call it a start at this point. I know he missed time with injury, but it tells you how slow a start he was off to. I'm not sure that window has expired. I do consider him a buy low. I do think he gets much, much better from here. A lot of the underlying numbers are very similar to what he did last year, when I think he overachieved, but he's underachieving by just as much this year. So yeah, I think making offers tonight might not be wise, but the next offer, I think you could still buy low on Conforto. I'm trying to see how many fantasy points he has so far, because 47.5 is going to be tough to beat.
Yeah.
But I'm having to go through a lot of rosters here. I'll get you an answer here soon. He's on one of my teams. Let me find that one.
No problem. You mentioned Juan Soto, who, again, has 5 home runs in 4 games. He mentioned at the Home Run Derby that this is sometimes something that can affect people's swings and hurt them in the second half.
5 home runs in 4 games. Is that what you said?
I believe so. That's what I have written down here. So I hope
not 4 home runs in 5 games, 5 home runs in 4 games.
Correct, for Juan Soto. And it seems like the Home Run Derby has kind of helped propel his power and got him back on track. So nice to see that from Juan Soto. Of course, no reason for concern. Conforto, still, the surface numbers are not very good. So continue to send out some offers if you can, if no one's paying
26 points is all Conforto scored since the All-Star break. Child's play.
No Juan Soto.
Child's play from that guy.
No Juan Soto. Other one I wanted to mention here was Enrique Hernandez, Kike Hernandez, who might be his name on some providers, but he also had a double dong on Monday. In his last 18 games, he's batting .279 with 7 homers, with more walks than strikeouts, and he's hitting a ton of fly balls during that stretch, Scott. So 43% rostered for Kike Hernandez. Not the most exciting player, but offers second base and outfield eligibility. Would you be looking to add Kike Hernandez anywhere?
I mean, if I would had a big enough need, he seems like a fine hot hand play. That's all he is. And that's all he ever has been and all he ever will be. Mm. But there's nothing wrong with doing that if the need is there. If you're considering Hernandez versus, I don't know, who are some of those middle infielders we talked about yesterday? Brendan Rodgers, Nico Horner. I like those guys more. David Fletcher, certainly.
Yeah. All right. I did want to look up exactly what Dom Smith has done in July. They have not updated these numbers yet, but I know it was his 4th home run of July, and obviously we're just about 3 weeks into the month, so could add on there. And Dom Smith, by the way, is rostered in 65% of CBS leagues, so might be out there in some of the shallowest of leagues, if you think there's a chance that he can turn it back on, which I was very excited about Dominic Smith coming into the season. It hasn't really come to fruition until now. Before we hit the news and notes, just want to thank everybody for watching us live on YouTube right now. It is very late here on the East Coast. And thank everyone who came to hang out for our live Q&A stream earlier on Monday night. And just a reminder that you can subscribe at youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. So if you're just catching this video for the first time, or you usually watch and you haven't subscribed yet, please do subscribe. Tap that notification bell. You get notified every time we go live or when we drop a new video like our Fantasy Baseball Today in 5 podcast, which usually come out sometime around 3 a.m. It's very late or early, depending on where you are. And speaking of Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, you can download and follow FBT in 5 and this very podcast as well, Fantasy Baseball Today, on Spotify. There have been some kind of weird things going on with Apple Podcasts the past month or so. So just a reminder that on Spotify, you can download and follow both of our Fantasy Baseball Today podcasts. All right, news and notes from Monday. We had quite a few IL placements, starting with Brandon Crawford. This one kind of came out of nowhere. He has an oblique strain. Manager Gabe Kapler expects Crawford to need between 10 to 14 days to make a full recovery. So it's actually not as bad as we've seen for some oblique injuries. So it sounds pretty mild there for Brandon Crawford.
Don't be surprised if it's longer, though.
For sure. Our, by the way, breakout shortstop for this season. There wasn't many names to choose from. And that's who we went with last week. Jazz Chisholm, who was Scott's breakout second baseman to this point, also went to the IL with a bone bruise in his left shoulder. He'll be shut down for at least 10 days. And it looked pretty bad. His arm was just kind of like went limp when it happened. So probably could be.
It looked bad. Don Mattingly said it didn't sound good in terms of, I guess, the prognosis. So, yeah, Jazz Chisholm, he keeps getting hurt. It's not good.
Not good at all. Alek Manoah went to the IL with a back bruise. Manoah was still able to play catch on Monday, so may not be looking at a lengthy absence there for Manoah. Gavin Lux.
He apparently fell down the dugout steps.
Oh, come on. Come on, Manoah. Get it together, bud. Well, I hope he's all right.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a big deal. I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I don't know why that detail was necessary, but
you know who else
saw it and wanted to share it.
You know who else fell down the stairs earlier, even before the season, was Robbie Ray. Look how that turned out for him. So
it's true. Lucky steps there.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of like a Toronto Blue Jays pitcher thing. So come on, guys, take it easy. Gavin Lux went to the IL with his left hamstring. Garrett Cooper went to the IL with a sprained elbow. Mike Trout, we're waiting, tweeting out emojis, telling us he might be back in Oakland, where the Angels are currently playing well. Mike Trout said that he ran at 90%, but still doesn't know when he'll begin a rehab assignment. Shane Bieber played catch on Monday. It was his first time doing so since he landed on the IL. So some nice positive news there from the Biebs. Tyler Glasnow continues to feel good after playing light catch again for Tampa Bay. John Means will return on Tuesday and start for the Orioles against the Tampa Bay Rays. Scott, if you have John Means in a daily lineup league, are you just throwing him right back out there?
I think you must. I'm a little nervous about it, to be honest. I'm a little worried about John Means in a post sticky substance world. Not that I'm accusing him of anything directly. I just, you know, you have your suspicions about everybody.
Sure, but it doesn't help when we had video of his hand sticking to his glove earlier in the season. So,
no, that doesn't help. No, I'm starting him in every league I have him, and just hoping for the best. And if it backfires, so be it. I've made my bed with John Means. We mean business together, and we forge ahead.
I was like, where is this going? All right, so basically that was a long way of saying, yes, you could start John Means if you play in a daily lineup league. Corey Seager could be activated from the IL as early as Wednesday. He'll be evaluated again on Tuesday for the Dodgers. After originally being listed as a starter on Monday night, Mookie Betts was scratched from the starting lineup due to that right hip irritation that he's been dealing with. Jack Flaherty is expected to face hitters this week. He's coming along quite slowly as he works his way back from a left oblique strain. Luis Robert will begin a rehab assignment Wednesday at High A Winston-Salem. He's been out since early May with that hip issue. Robert is currently 73% rostered. Should that be 100%, Scott?
Yeah, I think it should. I mean, if he's about to begin a rehab assignment, people were too slow to reclaim Eloy Jimenez, and now he's on the verge of returning. Mm-hmm. And Luis Robert might just be a couple weeks behind him. Those guys really, it seems like both are going to beat their timetables, so that's great to see.
Carlos Carrasco will report to AAA Syracuse for another rehab start on Tuesday. Buster Posey was reinstated and batting third on Monday. He hit a two-run bomb off of Tony Gonsolin in his first at-bat. Dodgers pitching prospect Josiah Gray is expected to be promoted to the Major League team on Tuesday. They don't know exactly what his role is going to be yet. He's 30% rostered, and we spoke about him a little bit on our live stream Q&A, Scott, but you're not running to go add Josiah Gray right away.
No, he didn't make it to five innings yet since returning from a shoulder issue. You know, make it to five innings in the minors. And it's not like Clayton Kershaw's expected to be out for long. You know, I don't think the Dodgers are going to push him hard enough that it could be one of those situations where he just impresses so much that they have to find a way to keep him around, moving David Price to the bullpen or whatever. I don't see it playing out that way for Gray. I see him going maybe four innings, if not as a starter, then as a bulk reliever following an opener or whatever. And maybe being sent back down right afterward. Maybe it gets another chance to do it, but you know, barring another injury that leaves that opening in the Dodgers rotation for longer, I don't think he'll have a chance to build up to a point in the majors where he can be, he can make a real impact in fantasy. It doesn't mean, you know, in deeper leagues where there's so little out there pitching wise that's interesting, you can't take a flyer on him and hope for the best. You know, I that's fine. But like in a standard 12 team league, probably would not be my first choice among pitchers on the waiver wire.
Mike Moustakas was seen taking grounders on Monday. He's been on the IL for 2 months with a heel injury. He's 67% rostered if you have the space to stash somebody, but there's a lot of players being stashed right now between both of the White Sox outfielders, Chris Sale, Carlos Carrasco, and just massive amount of injuries in general. So I find it pretty hard to hold on to Mike Moustakas, but there's an update for you. Justin Upton is starting a rehab assignment at AAA Salt Lake on Monday, which means that he already started it. So bad job, Frank, for not updating that verbiage. Mike Zunino left Monday's game due to left hip flexor tightness. And we do have some trade deadline rumors. According to John Heyman, there is keen interest in Nelson Cruz. Heyman listed the Rays, Blue Jays, and Oakland A's as potential landing spots for Nelson Cruz. And according to Pat Ragazzo, of SI.com, the Mets are looking to make a big splash at the trade deadline with Chris Bryant and Jose Berrios representing two of their top targets. Don't really have any prospect updates, but thought I would tell you that Jarren Duran went 1-for-6 with his first home run of his career. He also added two strikeouts on Monday. He is currently 67% rostered. Does that number sound right? 67%?
67. Yeah, I think that's about right until he, you know, obviously if he performs well, it needs to go up. Mixed bag in this game. Great to see his first major league home run, but only hitting six bats, two strikeouts, as you pointed out. And the home run itself was like a wall scraper to the opposite field. It was like an accidental home run. Like He hit it and then he ran hard because wasn't expecting it to go over the fence.
Right.
There was a time when every opposite field home run was impressive. And it's like, wow, look at that guy. He can hit it out the other way. But that day seems long gone. And now it's like less impressive to see that, I feel like, than like a home run we saw from Gavin Sheets tonight where like right off the bat, he knew it was gone, you know?
That was awesome. That home run was awesome. A 3-run walk-off bomb for Gavin Sheets. The first pitch that he saw from Jose Berrios in the seventh inning of a doubleheader. So it was the final inning. So nice. Awesome shot there from Gavin Sheets. All right. Did you know, have some random fun facts or maybe not so fun, when we're talking about Randy Arozarena. Did you know, Scott, that over Randy Arozarena's last 21 games, he is batting 167 with zero homers, zero steals, and five caught stealing?
Hmm.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
On the
Sounds
season,
like a really rough stretch for Mr. Arozarena.
Yeah, it is indeed. On the season, Arozarena is batting 308 against fastballs, 179 versus breaking pitches, and 200 versus off-speed pitches. So crushing fastballs this season, but struggling mightily against breaking and off-speed stuff. On the season, he does still have double-digit home runs and double-digit steals. Obviously, we're not looking to drop him anywhere, Scott, but you might want to think about benching him for now until he comes around. It's tough because if you do it in a roto league and you miss out on like a home run and a steal for a week or whatever it might be, you know, he has that kind of upside.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say we're not looking to drop him anywhere because in a points league, I think he's pretty fringy.
Yeah. He's probably
strikes out a lot. Doesn't walk much. Obviously. Well, the strikeout rate and walk rate could both be worse, but neither one is great. And obviously the steals aren't critical in a points league like they are in a categories league. I'm trying to see what his head-to-head points per game mark is. So 2.67 coming into today's game, that's basically Avisel Garcia, at least in points per game. Yikes. So, yeah, definitely pretty fringy.
Yeah. I don't know that there is a player that has a bigger discrepancy between their roto and head-to-head points value. Normally, it's Adalberto Mondesi, and if he ever returns, he probably will reclaim that throne, but Arozarena.
The first one I think of usually is Carlos Santana, actually, just the other way where he's
yeah, that makes
great
sense.
In points and fringy in roto.
All right. So, yeah, if you have Arozarena in a points league, pretty fringy there based on how bad he's been the past 3 weeks or so. Did you know this, Scott? Tim Anderson's average launch angle is 3.7 degrees this season. In July, it's up to 9.4 degrees. So, not exactly tripling it, but he has increased it quite a bit, and that's helped him hit home runs in three straight games for Tim Anderson. On the season, he's got a 56% ground ball rate, and in July, that's all the way down to 36% with both the line drive rate and fly ball rate up over 30%. So Tim Anderson, the power looks like it's going to come around here, Scott, with the increase in launch angle.
And he's homered on three straight days. I guess it's not three straight games because there was a doubleheader today, right?
Yeah.
So that makes sense. I mean, he's been killing it in July. And it's not like he was having a bad season before then, but, you know, definitely a step back from 2019, 2020, where he's more, you know, he had become this year more of like a second-tier shortstop than, you know, one of the real studs at the position. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll go on a surge that gets him back to true stud territory. I mean, he's still batting over 300.
Yeah.
The expected batting average isn't nearly as high as the previous two seasons. So I've been a little more suspicious of it. But third straight year batting well over 300.
Yeah, his isolated power, his slugging has been down quite a bit until this recent stretch of home runs for Tim Anderson. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he's still batting 314 on the season, 14 steals, 59 runs scored. Of course, the RBI a little bit lower because he's leading off for the Chicago White Sox. And I was very excited about him coming into the season. I think he's been probably a little bit of a letdown, but still, to give you 14 steals at this point is it's pretty nice there from Tim Anderson. All right, Scott, did you know Akil Baddoo, over his last 48 games, he is batting, this is including Monday night, where he went 2-for-5 with his seventh home run. Akil Baddoo's last 48 games, 322 batting average, 3 homers, 12 steals, 9 doubles, 2 triples, a 14% walk rate, 22% strikeout rate. Akil Baddoo, we talk about him a lot. That's because I think his roster rate is still too low. It's 55%. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, it's been a tough nut to crack because this was only his third home run since April. And that's not enough. I mean, the most encouraging thing is in the whole line is that the strikeout rate, which was just a disaster in April, it really knocked him off course after those awesome first 2 weeks. That's gone way down. That's gone way down since April, and you've seen the rise in batting average since then. So that's encouraging to see. He's showing the plate discipline that he had in the minors, that he showed in spring training. And he's running, which, you know, for five outfielder roto leagues, that's probably enough to get him in your lineup, at least when there's not a bunch of lefties on the schedule. I just wish we could see more power. You know, three home runs since April, one home run a month. I mean, If he was playing every day, it might be a little different. Obviously, David Fletcher doesn't provide any power, and the dude provides more speed than he does. But I don't know. I still see him as Badu is pretty fringy, even though I like some of the underlying treads. Like, I feel much better about his dynasty value than I did at the end of April. I can say that for him. But in terms of how useful he is right now, I don't know.
Well, what if I told you this, Scott? Over the last 28 days, Akil Badu is averaging 3.1 fantasy points per game, which is the same amount as Teoscar Hernandez, Starling Marte, and Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, I mean, all those walks help. All those walks help. I mean, you're still talking about an above average point per game amount during what is his hottest stretch of the season, right? I wanted to double check on the playing time to see if that's gone up recently. And let's see.
The numbers against lefties are still brutal.
And it looks like he's sitting most of the time against lefties, not every time. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think maybe he's a little undervalued, but I'm not quite ready to say he's Jonathan India in terms of being undervalued. Remember when Jonathan India first started reaching base a lot and he moved up to the leadoff spot for the Reds, and it took a while to get his roster rate up to about the 80% level it is now?
Yeah.
I just think Badu is a little short of that. He needs to improve the playing time. He needs to improve the power. But he's close. He's close, and I feel good about the direction he's headed.
All right. Next up, did you know that since the start of May, Josh Bell is batting .283 with 11 home runs in 62 games? That is a 26 home run pace over the course of 150 games, which is not a great amount. But Josh Bell's 85% rostered. Scott, would you feel comfortable having him as a starting corner infielder in a roto league? Anything shallower than that? Or is Josh Bell just fine? He's meh.
He's meh, I think. You know, it feels like he's been a lot better since April, but even then, since April, entering today's game with the home run, .285 with an .830 OPS. I mean, those numbers are fine, but from a guy who's not quite playing every day because Ryan Zimmerman keeps horning in, you know? Yeah, I think he's pretty fringy, Bell is.
All right, Josh Bell, fringy, but maybe it's just because I have him in a 15-team roto league. It feels like he's playing much better than he is, but I guess it's just...
Well, 15-team league, yeah. Fine.
Yeah, anyone could look good in that format. So, yeah. Go ahead.
You know, Patrick Wisdom had a big game today, 3 hits and a homer. And I suspect now that Jock Peterson's gone, certainly if others get shipped out, I expect Patrick Wisdom's playing time issues are going to be no more. And like in a roto league, Wisdom versus Bell, to me that seems pretty close, like a pretty close call. Like I feel like Wisdom's going to provide more power in all likelihood. I know he's much more available than Bell is.
Well, it's funny you bring up Patrick Wisdom because he was the next one that I have here. He went 3-for-4 with his 14th home run in just 47 games this season. That's a 44 home run pace over 150 games. Did you know that Patrick Wisdom's 10.9% barrel per plate appearance is tied with Kyle Schwarber and Rafael Devers this season? So he strikes out a ton, 39% strikeout rate. Can't dispute that. But when he puts the ball in play, Patrick Wisdom absolutely crushes the ball. He's 35% rostered, Scott. What should that number be? It sounds like you think he's under rostered.
Yeah, probably about 50. Say 50. Most of the roto leagues, I think that would be about 50%.
All right, well, how about if I pit two sluggers from Chicago up against each other, Scott? Who would you rather have, Patrick Wisdom or Gavin Sheets, who hit that 3-run walk-off home run off of Jose Berríos? It was his 5th home run of the season. 21% rostered is Gavin Sheets. He's got first and outfield eligibility. I kind of like the profile so far. It's a small sample size, 12% walk rate, 23% K rate, .556 expected slug. Gavin Sheets is pretty interesting.
Oh, because he struck out 3 times tonight. I was going to say that K rate, 23% K rate stat you just gave seemed too high. He had not been striking out much at all.
All I have is updated numbers, Scott.
Yeah, well, good for you. I was looking at outdated ones. Yeah, I like the profile a lot for Sheets too. But with Eloy Jimenez to return, and it sounds like Luis Robert might be close behind him. I don't know if the playing time is going to get any better for Sheets, and it's already not quite every day. So I think in a roto league, I'd want Wisdom more, and I'd want Josh Bell more. If you could guarantee me full-time at-bats for Gavin Sheets, it'd be a different story. But I think all of those guys belong about in the same range.
All right, so we do like Gavin Sheets, but we do like Patrick Wisdom a little bit more than him. And you know what else we like?
Yeah, roto. I don't think there's much to like about Patrick Wisdom for points leagues, to be clear, because that strikeout rate is so high. But I just think he could be a straight-up masher for you down the stretch.
Yeah, that strikeout rate's killer, man. Nearly 40% strikeout rate for Patrick Wisdom this season. And I was just getting ready to tell you how much we like Patrick Wisdom. We also like Express Clothing. We got to tell you about the awesome clothing from Express. We've talked a bunch about their different styles, but maybe you just need something to wear for the summer. Going out to the park, a cookout, a baseball game, whatever it is. Head to Express. They have all different kinds of comfort bottoms and shorts. You'll specifically want to check out their comfort waist chinos, joggers, and drawstring shorts. I can vouch for the elastic drawstring waistband, which allows for all-day comfort, great for looking sharp while staying relaxed. And I can't recommend their polo shirts enough either. I'm wearing another one of them here. It's very nice, really enjoy it. One of a kind graphics, fresh colors, and summer prints, so you'll always stand out, plus the softest fabrics you'll ever feel. Yeah, like this, it's kind of like a stretchy, you know, fits right to your body. It's really nice, man. It's light too. It's definitely nice to wear during the summertime. You don't have any heavy clothing on your body there. We encourage all our listeners to be on the lookout for great summer deals in stores and at express.com. Express confidence, express you. Let's get back to some fun facts for fantasy baseball. Did you know that Luis Arraez is leading off consistently once again for the Minnesota Twins? And over his last 28 games, he is batting .340, 6 doubles, 3 triples, 19 runs, and exactly 0 home runs. 37% rostered is Luis Arraez. Second base, third base, and outfield eligibility. Anything to see here, Scott? It's hard because he doesn't offer anything other than really batting average and runs scored, but it's a very high batting average. So,
yeah, I mean, there's obviously not a particularly high ceiling here, but he could do the sorts of things David Fletcher's doing, and that has value, especially with that kind of versatility.
And he is much less rostered than David Fletcher at this point, too. So it's more so, you know, if you play in a deeper points league, we talk a lot about the standard roster size here where it's just second base, third base. There's no corner. There's no middle. It's only 3 outfielders. But if you do play in a deeper points league, my home league, we use 4 outfielders, a corner, a middle. Then Luis Arraez is someone that should be rostered in a league like that. And if you play.
I wanted to double check this because I knew this was the case earlier in the year. Arraez tends to sit against left-handed pitchers. Mm-hmm. So that would be a key distinction between him and David Fletcher, even though I think that the batting profile is very similar. So, it doesn't mean he's useless, Arraez, but mm-hmm. I would put him a step behind Fletcher for that reason.
Oh, 100%. And the way Fletcher's playing right now, he's out of his mind, right? It's batting average over .400 or something like that since the middle of June. So he's just absolutely been crushing it. But if you do play in a little bit of a deeper league and someone like Fletcher is not available, then Arraez is the next man up in that same mold. And from one leadoff man to another, Alcides Escobar, who used to play for the Kansas City Royals. That's right. That Alcides Escobar has been leaning off for the Nationals, a team that has the second best weighted on base average over the past 30 days. So lots of run scoring opportunities. He's hitting ahead of Trey Turner and Juan Soto in their lineup. On Monday, he goes 2-for-3 with a walk, 3 runs scored. He's batting .316 and .827 OPS. He was out of baseball and all of a sudden he's back and he's leading off for one of the hottest lineups in baseball. He's 2% rostered, Scott. So obviously a deeper format here, but anything to see Alcides Escobar?
I don't think there's any staying power. So if you want to ride the hot hand in a deep league, I can't necessarily blame you, but he's not a long-term solution for you.
All right. I play in some 15 teamers. I think he might be available in your 24 team head-to-head points league, which tells you everything you need to know about Alcides Escobar. Yes. But some cheap batting average and runs scored right now while he's hot. I have three starting pitchers here that are a combined 4% rostered. So, man, we're digging deep here. But did you know any of these starting pitchers before Monday? Because I really didn't know anything about these guys. Griffin Jacks, Spencer Watkins, and Jake Woodford. Who? Exactly. That's right. Griffin Jacks started for the Twins. He was at the White Sox. 4 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. Spencer Watkins started for the Orioles. 6 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts against Tampa Bay. And Jake Woodford was up against the Cubs. Started for the Cardinals. 5 2/3, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. The deepest of leagues here, Scott. But Jacks, Watkins, Woodford. Do you know anything about these guys?
We are really going deep here today. I had heard of them all before recently, and I had looked at their minor league pages, their minor league history. I was not impressed. I was not impressed by any of them. None of them were big strikeout guys in the minors. And I don't think having good starts here on Monday really changes their outlook for me. They're just kind of organizational depth guys. The one who kind of caught my attention was Griffin Jacks of the Twins. And he may have the least chance of sticking around, actually. But, you know, only went 4 innings, 1 hit allowed, 6 strikeouts. 16 swinging strikes on 68 pitches. 4 on the fastball, 7 on the slider, 5 on the changeup. So, you know, just beyond the fact he kept runs off the board, like, he really seemed to have the White Sox fooled here. And, you know, go looking even further under the hood, his fastball has a high spin rate. It's a high spin fastball. It was up 1.2 miles per hour in this one from his previous major league appearance. I don't know what to make of that, but bottom line is good spin on the fastball. Seems like it could be a pretty good swing and miss pitch. But again, you look at that minor league track record, not a lot of history of that. He's 26 years old, so, you know, it's not like he's some up-and-comer, really. I don't know. After the whole Zach Thompson thing with the Marlins, it pays to keep an open mind when you see a guy missing bats like that. Just kind of keep the name Griffin Jacks in the back of your mind. I don't think there's probably nothing here, but the start was interesting beyond just he allowed 1 earned run in 4 innings.
I do agree that of these three, Griffin Jacks, Spencer Watkins, and Jake Woodford, Jacks was the one that intrigued me the most. Former third-round pick, 26 years old, career in the minors, 3.17 ERA, 1.18 whip. Those are pretty good numbers. None of these guys really had great strikeout stuff in the minor leagues, but yeah, look, if you play in AL only, Jacks and Watkins, if you play in NL only, Jake Woodford, those are some names there that you can look at adding. And we're probably one J-Hap start, like one more blow-up start away from him getting DFA'd or something. So maybe that's
Jackson's. I don't know. He's kind of alternated great starts with terrible ones, has J-Hap. So I don't know.
I know he got blown up his last one, but...
Yeah, he did.
All right. I'll take your word for it, Scott. But that might be the path for Griffin Jacks getting into the rotation. So again, just remember the name. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, what happened in L.A.? We'll let you know next here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Well, one of the best starting pitchers in fantasy baseball of the season, Kevin Gausman, marched into Chavez Ravine and wasn't very good. 3 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. I would be willing to bet that this is the shortest outing of the season, though I will confirm that in just a second. So not used to what we're seeing from Kevin Gausman here. Overall, I'm not very worried. The pitcher on the other side of this game, Tony Gonsolin up against the Giants, the juggernaut that is the Giants, by the way, 3 1/3, 5 hits, 3 runs, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts, more walks than strikeouts in this game. He has only gone 5 innings in 1 of 7 starts. He's pitched 8 times this year. One of them was a relief appearance where he didn't go 5 innings in that either. Makes sense. It's a relief appearance, whatever. Fastball velocity was down 1 mile per hour in the start here for Gonsolin. I don't know, Scott. I mean, we keep talking up Gonsolin, and I hear you. I know what his upside is, and I saw what he did last year and the past couple of years, and I think that there is a really good pitcher somewhere in there with Gonsolin. It's just we really, really have not seen it to this point.
I don't know about that. I dispute that. I dispute your claim here, Frank. This was ugly. This was ugly against the Giants and fastball velocity being down 1 mile per hour. You know, I don't know if that's something we need to worry about going forward, but probably didn't help. But he's been trending the right direction before that. So previous 4 starts, going back to June 25th, 4 innings, 1 hit, 1 run, 7 strikeouts. The next start, 3 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 4 strikeouts. He did have 3 walks during that one, but that was his worst start during the stretch because the next one was 5 1/3, 2 hits, no runs, 3 strikeouts. And then last time out, 4 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. He threw 80 pitches in this one. He threw 83 pitches in the previous one. So the pitch count has been building up, 2 in a row now with 80 pitches. And, you know, those stat lines, one after another, they're really strong. They're short, but strong stat lines over short 4 or 5 inning stints in the 4 starts leading up to this one. So obviously they've had him building up on the job, and it's taken a while. It's taken longer than I hoped it would, but he is trending the right direction as far as that goes. And, you know, even with this kind of blow up here against the Giants, his ERA is still 2.83. I don't know. I think he's worth holding on to.
Tony Gonsolin is still, let's see what this roster rate is, 85% rostered. So a lot of people are holding. The ERA you mentioned is still at 2.83. How about this? Does this matter to you, Scott? His xFIP is at 5.01, and he typically pitches more so to fly balls, but this year it's up even more, actually. He's up around 47% fly ball rate. Swinging strikes look pretty good, over 13% this season, but he's falling behind in counts. First pitch strike percentage is down. Almost 6 walks per 9 to this point. I want to hold. I'm with you. He was great last year. It's just, even the underlying numbers don't look very good for Tony Gonsolin right now. So it's tough.
Fair. And it would be inconsistent of me to say the xFIP doesn't matter in his case.
Yep.
To me at all. But worth pointing out, rookie season 2019, pitched 40 innings, 2.93 ERA versus a 4.90 xFIP. Last year, pitched 46 2/3 innings, 2.31 ERA versus a 3.80 xFIP. You mentioned he's always kind of a fly ball pitcher, and fly balls, a high fly ball rate is going to be bad for xFIP. That's part of the formula. But he might be one of those weird pitchers that his fly balls aren't so bad. So yeah. They end up being outs, and that they end up actually being a good thing for him.
He pitches in a good park for that too. So obviously pitching out there in Dodger Stadium, and yeah, maybe he's just really good at home run suppression regardless of allowing as many fly balls as he does. So yeah, you're right. That is a consistent theme with him where his ERA is consistently much lower than his xFIP. All right, we'll hold. We'll hold for now, but we've got to start to see something. We got to start to see something from Tony Gonsolin. It's so interesting that the Giants lineup, they're currently up 7-2 against the Dodgers, and you just look up and down this Giants lineup, and it's just a band of misfits that are just getting it done. And it's, look, all the credit to the Giants right now. And it's a fun season for their fans too, but man, it's, I don't know how they're pulling off what they're pulling off, but they are doing it. So shout out to the Giants. I've got the drop-o-meter for some starting pitchers outside of Tony Gonsolin. I guess he could have been in this mix. And actually I did this because I wanted to pull up and see if this was Kevin Gausman's lowest inning total of the season, and it was his shortest start of the season. So, all right, it was his first start back from a family medical emergency. So maybe that's part of the reason why he's limited here. The drop-o-meter for some starting pitchers, Ross Stripling, could have put him in, oh my goodness gracious. He recorded 1 out. He gave up 4 hits, 2 walks, 6 earned runs. He has 10 earned runs over his last 2 starts. That is just 4 innings pitched, 53% rostered. It was fun while it lasted, right, Scott?
Yeah, I wish I'd stood my ground with Ross Stripling. I'd been disregarding it, and then I read an article about, oh, he had a pitch tipping issue, and he fixed it. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah. Nope. Let him go.
I might just
Stripling.
I might just clip that sound of you going. It's pretty good. I enjoyed that. All right, so he's 53% roster. We can drop him everywhere. I mean, how about in a 15 team league? Would you drop him there as well?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't be afraid to.
All right.
You know, there's a good chance starting a reliever is going to be better for you. Get a payoff more. Start an Andrew Kittredge or something like that.
Jonathan Loaisiga when he returns for the Yankees. This one's a little bit facetious. He just had a bad start, but yeah, it gives us a reason to talk about him. Kyle Gibson at the Tigers. By the way, I keep bringing up those Tigers, man. They are not the matchup that they were earlier in the season. They are a pesky bunch right now. So just keep that in mind when you see them on the schedule for your starting pitchers. Kyle Gibson at the Tigers in this one. 5 innings, 10 hits, 8 earned runs. And even after this dreadful start, he's got a 2.69 ERA and a 1.13 whip on the season. So we're not dropping him, Scott, but...
No, of course not, but it is two bad starts in a row. It's not just an isolated one. The ERA has jumped from 198 to 286 in those two starts. Still a 393 xFIP. Doesn't strike out many guys. Good ground ball pitcher, but... I think he's a clear regression candidate for the second half. Between the xFIP and just the history, I feel confident saying that about Kyle Gibson, and we may be starting to see it.
And we have talked him up as a sell-high candidate before. Someone like Gibson and Anthony DeSclafani, who have these awesome surface numbers, but some of the underlying stuff says that they've been very fortunate this year. And by the way, you did say it correctly, Scott. He has a 2.86 ERA, so I stand corrected. I said 2.69, so you are right there, sir, for Kyle Gibson. Casey Mize, another one, where he's pretty good. 4 innings, 1 hit, but he only goes 4 innings. That's now 3 straight starts where he's gone 4 innings or less. Still 84% rostered. Drop-o-meter, Scott.
I would say about a 4. See, here's the thing. I did some research tonight because I'm writing an article about pitchers who may be facing an innings limit. And I looked into Mize and Skubal of the Tigers, who are both on the list. This is not the rest of season plan for him. Apparently, they're right around the All-Star break here. They're going to have him throw only 3 or 4 innings at a time. But then there's going to come a point late July, early August, where they start letting him go however long he's able to go again. So keep that in mind. The plan, they do want to try and get him all the way through the season. But as opposed to shrinking the innings, making it, you know, a consistent shrinking of the innings till the season's over. It's kind of a pull him back here for a while and then let him go again. That's the plan.
It's definitely easier to hold on to him in a roto or categories league because even when he pitches, he's still pitching well. It's just if you play in a points league, that lack of volume is definitely going to it's going to hurt you there for Casey Mize. So a 4 on the drop-o-meter for Scott.
Yeah, let's say a 5. Let's say a 5.
5. All right. He's still 84% rostered. So maybe in some shallower leagues, you can look to drop him. And would you look to drop him for someone like Caleb Smith, Scott, who just had a pretty good start against the Pirates on Monday, 6 2/3, 6 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. Are you falling for it?
I mean, his xFIP's pushing 5. And it's one of the worst swinging strike rates he's ever had. So no.
Wow, Scott, where's the consistency here? You like Tony Gonsolin with his 5 xFIP, but not Caleb Smith? Come on, man.
Well, yeah, a little more to it than that, but...
Yes, of course.
Fair enough.
For Caleb Smith, I haven't actually looked into what the swinging strikes were. 18 in this start, Scott. All right. Let's see what happens
here. Yeah, 18.
18 swinging strikes on 93 pitches for Caleb Smith here, so...
I didn't see the updated number. That's a good swinging strike start, but it's still a low rate. He had a very low rate entering this start, so at least need to see more of that.
All right, so we're not dropping Mize for him. Would you drop Stripling for Caleb Smith?
I think it's 6½ dozen at the other. Yeah, probably wouldn't hurt to if you really worried about losing Smith to somebody else. In most leagues, I don't think it's an issue, though.
All right, We had some dingers on Monday, some notable dingers. Nelson Cruz hit his 19th. Trey Turner went 2-for-4 with a triple and his 18th home run of the season. Yoan Moncada has now homered in back-to-back days. That is not games because they had a doubleheader on Monday. He still has only 7 homers and 2 steals in 82 games, so he's making more contact. The underlying numbers look okay, but he's still just kind of meh. That's Yoan Moncada. Yordan Alvarez hit his 17th. Franmil Reyes hit his 16th. Paul Goldschmidt, he's hot. 2-for-5 with his 16th home run. Ramon Laureano hit his 14th. And Matt Olson, 24th home run of the season for the big lefty out there in Oakland. Some leftovers from Monday. Got a bunch of stuff here, so I'm just going to bounce around a little bit here, Scott, and if anything catches your ear or eye, then
all right,
feel free to jump in. Lance Lynn up against the Twins, seven innings, 5 hits, 1 run, only 4 strikeouts. Still, the ERA down to 1.94, the WHIP at 1.02. Miguel Rojas went 3-for-4 with his 5th home run, 45% rostered. He's pretty fringy, not very exciting there for Miguel Rojas. Does lead off against left-handed pitching for those who play in deeper daily leagues. John Lester actually hit a home run in this game. It feels like everyone hit a home run for Washington in this game against the Marlins, but he went 7 shutouts, 6 hits, 7 strikeouts. Even with this start, he's got a 4.99 ERA and a 1.65 WHIP. So
his previous 3 starts were all just awful, awful starts. So previous 4, actually. Yeah. So no, I'm not. I don't think you should change your stance on Lester because of the start.
Austin Hayes went 3-for-5 with a run and an RBI. He's 30% rostered over his last 15 games. He's batting .327 with 3 homers. However, he mashes left-handed pitching. He's got a .947 OPS and only a .625 OPS versus right-handed pitching. So numbers look pretty good recently, Scott. 30% roster for Austin Hayes. Is that too low? Just right?
I think that is probably about right.
His teammate Trey Mancini went 2-for-4 and has 5 hits over his last 3 games. So he had a really rough June, but bouncing back a little bit here in July for Trey Mancini. Jose Berríos at the White Sox, he was absolutely dealing. I think they just left him in there too long. He was pitching into the 7th inning, 4 hits, 5 runs, 8 strikeouts, 16 swinging strikes on 94 pitches for Jose Berríos. Saw some nice games from JD Martinez, went 4-for-4 with 2 doubles. George Springer went 3-for-4 with a double himself. Amed Rosario, my man, he's heating back up. That's right, 8 hits with a stolen base over his last 4 games. I wouldn't have blamed you for dropping him. He was pretty cold for the past month or so. But if you lost Lindor and you need some speed, I think Amed Rosario is going to provide that. He's 40% rostered. Nice little shout out from Tyler Naquin. He had 5 hits on Monday, 5-for-6 with 4 RBI. But he has really slowed up himself. 55% rostered, Scott. I think that's probably too high for Tyler Naquin.
I would agree.
All right. Shohei Ohtani and Cole Irvin have themselves a nice little pitching matchup here, pitcher's duel. Ohtani goes 6 shutout with 8 strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 96 pitches. And then Cole Irvin, 7 shutout, 7 hits allowed, only 3 strikeouts, only 6 swinging strikes. I don't really know how he does it, Scott. Maybe pitching in Oco. Nice big old stadium there helps him out, but he's got a 3.42 ERA and a 1.18 WHIP for Cole Irvin this season.
So he doesn't have the history like Tony Gonsolin does, but like the only thing I can figure is maybe he's good at home run suppression as well. Less than 1 per inning. That's a good rate despite him being a fly ball pitcher. And so, you know, 4.63 xFIP, that's more than a run higher than his ERA, more than a point higher than his ERA. So, you know, obviously he looks like a major regression candidate, but and for a while there, let's see, what month was that? June? It seemed like it was happening, but then he's come back around. 3 earned runs or fewer in 7 of his past 8 starts Cole Irvin has put together here. So, you know, not a lot of faith in him, but particularly since he's RP eligible, I can understand why you'd want to roster him in a points league.
Yes. And Cole Irvin is 73% rostered, so still might actually be hanging around there in some shallower points leagues. So if you want to pick him up with the SPARP eligibility, I think that makes some sense. But we'll throw him in that similar bucket with Kyle Gibson and Anthony DeSclafani, where we do expect regression coming for all three of those pitchers rest of season. The call to the pen, some bullpen updates for the Twins in game one of their doubleheader. Taylor Rogers was used in the sixth inning to face 2, 3, and 4 in the lineup in a tie game. Hansel Robles would pitch later on. He gave up an unearned run, but did grab his 10th save of the season. For the Mets, Edwin Diaz blew a one-run lead, and he now has 3 blown saves in his last 3 relief appearances. So I don't even know who would be the next person up. Seth Lugo was the setup man. He pitched the inning before Edwin Diaz in this game, but his numbers are inflated. He had a really bad outing over the weekend as well. If anything were to happen to Diaz, Scott, do you think it would be Lugo?
I don't know. Yeah, I was wondering that too. Trevor May actually works the eighth inning more consistently than Lugo has been. So he would be a candidate as well. But neither one of them has put up closer caliber numbers. I mean, you could argue even with this rough patch, Edwin Diaz's numbers overall are better. I know the ERA is higher than Trevor May at this point. But yeah, I would be surprised if they were thinking about making a change there anytime soon.
Trevor May, by the way, it's funny you bring him up, Scott, because he did pitch later in this game once they grabbed the lead and picked up his 3rd save of the season in extra innings there. So
there you go.
A name to remember.
I mean, obviously extra inning game, but still.
Trevor May, name to remember. For the Astros, Ryan Pressly got his 17th save. For Oakland, Lou Trevino pitched 2 innings and picked up his 15th save of the season. Joaquin Soria for the Diamondbacks picked up his 5th save of the season. To stream or not to stream for Tuesday, Tyler Anderson at the Diamondbacks, Dane Dunning at the Tigers, Shane McClanahan versus the Orioles, Mike Minor at the Brewers, Eric Lauer versus the Royals, and Paolo Espino versus the Marlins.
I think Shane McClanahan was the only one we were willing to recommend yesterday, right?
Yes. I did add Paolo Espino to this group because he's facing the Marlins, and they just made John Lester look good.
And Espino's ERA is actually fine this year, but he's a 34-year-old, career minor leaguer, basically, who doesn't have swing and miss stuff. So I would not trust him.
I do agree with that. I like McClanahan the most in standard leagues. If you play in a deeper league, Tyler Anderson and Espino are the ones I would look at. Again, only in deeper leagues. For Wednesday, to stream or not to stream, Michael Wacha versus the Orioles, Chad Kuhl at the Diamondbacks, Madison Bumgarner versus the Pirates, Eric Fetty versus the Marlins, Jordan Lyles at the Tigers, and Brad Keller at the Brewers. Now, I got to stop putting the Tigers in here if I keep saying how good they are, so I've got to step it up.
They still have a bottom 10 offense in OPS, but I guess it's gotten better. Brad Keller at Milwaukee, I feel good about that one. I'm buying into the turnaround for Keller, and he's gotten his mechanics back in order, staying on top of the ball, which is important for a sinker baller like him, especially. Confidence in the slider again, 2 really good starts right before the All-Star break, and this is a great matchup against the Brewers. So Keller, I can give a full-throated endorsement to. The others would only be half-throated endorsements, but Madison Bumgarner against the Pirates, Michael Wacha against the Orioles. Neither of them seems so bad.
Hey, I mean, Caleb Smith just pitched against the Pirates as a left-handed pitcher and had, what'd we say, 18 swinging strikes? So
yep.
Maybe that's a sign of things to come for Madison Bumgarner in that game against the Pirates. All right, Scott, Team Name Tuesday. We got to wrap it up, and we've got to redeem ourselves. Are you ready?
I hope so.
We actually, I don't have that many. I only have, looks like, 4 team names. So continue to send those in if you want us to read them on the air. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. This one's from Pat in Ohio. I Nola Watkins Ryu did Class A bummer.
Okay, I follow that. It looks like nonsense. You have to say it out loud for it to come across, which not everybody's going to do in your league. They're just going to be like, what is this combination of names? And they're not going to think about it anymore.
I appreciate the ones that use way too many names and they're still pretty clever. So
I have an appreciation for it, but the bottom line is it's going to go over most people's heads.
Fun fact, I've never seen the movie I Know What You Did Last Summer. So surprising there.
Not missing much in that case.
All right. It's a little bit worse than Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Scott?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. These are from Rosenberg, Lars Nootbaar is a star. No clue what that's from.
Is it just, are they just rhyming, or is that, it's got to be a reference to something, right?
Yeah, I mean, I Google all of these beforehand just to make sure that they're PG and to see what they're a reference to. I couldn't find anything.
Lars Nootbaar, like, if you're going to go the Nootbaar route, it has to be snack related or like IKEA related or both.
Break me off a piece of that Lars Nootbaar.
There you go.
That's pretty good. This next one, we need the funk Hauser. Gotta have that funk Hauser. We need the funk Hauser.
Okay. It's a little...
I know.
It's a little too easy. Right?
I tried to jazz it up a little bit with my singing
ability. I like
ability.
To be critical here. Okay. This is what I do. This is what I do when I try to come up with my own team names, by the way, which is why I don't try that hard anymore, because I talk myself out of all of them.
All right, this last one's from Omar, and I believe that he either put it in the email or the subject was, this isn't very good, but I'll send it in anyway. Tyler the Creatorkelson. Do you know what that's a reference to?
It sounds familiar, but no.
Tyler the Creator is a hip-hop artist.
Okay. I'm sure I've heard of him before.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I've never dabbled. You know how it is. I've never dabbled much myself. Although I listen to all different kinds of music, but I heard he has a new album out. I think I'm going to check it out. And with that, good spot to wrap up here. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye bye.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.